Hiya, Wanju, hello, welcome to another episode of The Curb. I'm Andrew F. Pierce, and this is a podcast where I bring you in-depth interviews with filmmakers, creatives, and curators of culture. This podcast is recorded in Boorloo, Western Australia, sovereignty never ceded. Before commencing her career as a filmmaker, Jane Larkin was an Australian representative sprinter, pushing her body to the limits on the track. In the moments of preparation, cool downs, and every minute in between, Jane was building friendships, learning from fellow athletes, and seeing a world of sports that we rarely get to see in cinema. After shifting over to acting in 2018, Jane embraced roles in films like Ron Howard's 13 Lives and the Netflix series Boy Swallows Universe, before commencing on her biggest creative project yet, The Edge. Jane wears multiple hats on her feature film debut, embracing the role of director, writer, producer, and co-lead actor as she plays the role of Annie Murphy. Like Jane, Annie is a sprinter, and it's her performance alongside fellow athletes-turned-actors Lily Riley as powerlifter who plays Sylvia, and Paralympic swimmer Mei Ichinose who plays Yui, that gives The Edge a docudrama feeling. This is ultimately a film about the world of sport, and to get that holistic perspective, Jane consciously brings us into the lives of Annie, Sylvia, and Yui, with each given their chance to explore their lived perspectives of women in the world of athletics. Jane's script comfortably gives space for each actor to explore the realities of sports, the visceral nature of vomiting during training, the prevalence of sexual abuse, the continued harassment and criticism which leads to complex relationships with body images, and a lot more. But while these are heavy subjects to present on screen, Jane consciously gives them space to breathe by imbuing each character with another aspect that is rarely seen on screen from a women's perspective, friendship in competitive spaces. As Annie, Sylvia, and Yui don't directly compete with one another on the sports level, a lesser film might find space to have them compete with each other outside of the sporting arena. It's then comforting to see that The Edge delves into supportive relationships, with each character giving the other the space to be nurtured, heard, and guided through whatever challenges they're facing. The Edge's levity and warmth come from these core relationships, allowing the film to resonate long after it's finished. These aspects are also elevated by scenes that carry immense visual weight, whether it be a closing shot of the women on the beach, or the overwhelming, in tone, underwater shots of Yui. In the following interview, Jane refers to one of the cinema's great sporting films, Chariots of Fire, as an inspiration for her creative work as a filmmaker, and it's in these moments of invigoration, captured brilliantly by cinematographer Ben Nibb, that The Edge makes its mark as an impressive entry in the Australian sports genre. This is an expansive interview which ranges from Jane discussing her decision to shift from athletics to acting, how she managed that docudrama vibe, and finally, talking about the film's upcoming world premiere at the Gold Coast Film Festival on Friday, 2nd of May 2025. The Edge will also have an encore screening on Tuesday, 6th of May 2025. For all ticketing details, visit gcff.com.au. To keep track of where The Edge is screening, make sure to follow Jane on Instagram at Janie Larks and also the film's account, The Edge, at Instagram. In the following interview, I also reference Viola Davis's recent comment about her physicality in the film The Woman King. That discussion can also be found on Vanity Fair's YouTube page. If you want to find out more about the work that we do on The Curb, then head over to thecurb.com.au or follow us on Instagram, Facebook, or Blue Sky at thecurbau. We are a completely independent ad-free website that lives on the support of listeners and readers just like yourself. For an exclusive extended interview with Jane Larkin, visit patreon.com/thecurbau, and you can also support us there from as little as $1 a month. If you are unable to financially support us, that's okay. Then please also consider sharing this interview with your film-loving friends. We'd also love it if you could rate and review us on the podcast player of your choice. For every review helps amplify the interviews and stories from filmmakers to a wider audience. Right, here is the trailer for the Gold Coast Film Festival, followed by my interview with Jane Larkin as she talks about her feature film debut, The Edge.
Oh, God, they're kissing.
Whoa.
We'll be right back.
definitely no place for a city girl.
Possession of our ancestors.
Let's jump into starting to talk about your work. Something which is kind of the foundation of what you do as an athlete here, but also as a creative. And I'm curious if you can talk about the dual journey of initially wanting to be an athlete and then, you know, incorporating or when the shift over to acting and filmmaking came into it. So what was your initial drive to be an athlete and then filmmaking?
I absolutely wanted to be an Olympian from the time I was a very young child. It's one of my earliest memories. I used to race kids in the neighborhood. And I just absolutely, there's nothing like the feeling of just running barefoot on the grass, feeling like you're, you know, you're leaving all your troubles behind. And I was fast. I was gifted with speed and I loved winning. And I think the combination of those two feelings was just, it was a high. It was a high that I never really was able to run away from. And I used to say to my parents, yep, I'm going to be an Olympian. I'm going to be an Olympian. I'm going to make Australian teams. I mean, I made Australian teams. I was never an Olympian though. So that was a bit of a sad point we'll get into later. But, you know, mum and dad, I think, were always a little bit confused by my competitive streak. They were always like, oh, okay, that's great. Like, you know, it's a lot of work. And I was always like, yeah, I know, I'll do anything. I'll do whatever it takes. You know, very, very competitive child. Mum and dad coined the term board flipper because I used to, I'm a little bit better now, but I used to flip the boards in Monopoly and whatnot. But I think I loved performing. And that's why I think athletics and acting actually have such a correlation because they are both performance-based. And I loved the idea there was this real moment in my childhood where, like, no one was coming to save me from myself. Like, I was behind the line. It didn't matter what race I'd won before. It didn't matter what was going to happen in the future. Like, life was happening in that moment. And even as a young child, there was an accountability that you didn't get anywhere else. It's like, no, like, if I'm going to win this, this is going to be on me. Or if I'm going to lose this, this is going to be on me. And I think sport in many ways forces you to grow up because I remember saying to my coach, who was a dual Olympian, Denise Boyd, she's incredible, made two 200-meter finals at the Olympics. I said to her, like, what if, like, I let the nerves just overtake me? Or what if I can't handle it? Or what if I do this? And then she's like, well, I guess then it's not for you. And there was something really addictive about that, about the win and lose mentality and about everything just being down to that moment. And I loved it. I loved pushing myself. I loved the stories that came out of athletics. Like, you get to see the very best and worst of people, I think, in those instances. And my mum and grandma, long line of English teachers and journalists and whatnot and creatives. So for me, I loved that. I loved performing on the track and I loved training and I loved pushing. But I always I didn't really like the idea of box. I remember growing up and people were like, okay, so you're the athlete. And I was like, well, I'm athletic, but there's more to me than that. I always kind of felt like that, just like everybody. Like everybody has, like, we're multifaceted beings. And so I was always in drama growing up and I always said, you know, I want to do this and I want to do that. And mum and dad would laugh and say, sometimes to be really good at something and not a jack of all trades, you have to pick it. And then growing up and seeing, like, The Rock and Arnold Schwarzenegger, I was like, actually, maybe you don't have to pick it. Maybe you just have to pick your moments. And I really liked that. I mean, I loved that Arnold Schwarzenegger went from elite sport and, like, athletics to the world of film and TV and then to politics. And I remember, I don't think I'll go into politics anymore, but there was a second where I thought that sounded pretty great. Yeah. And I think mum and dad thought that dream would sort of go away, but I just was always addicted to film. Cinema was my escape. I studied it at uni. And then when I was writing a script, I don't know how much they thought was a hobby and how much wasn't. But I was lucky that I've got very patient family and a very patient partner. And when I was like, yep, I'm going to make this transition now, I knew that it would be time to switch when I lost the hunger for the sport. Mm. And there was a moment where I lost the hunger and I was like, now's it. Now's the time to pursue a different chapter of life. But I was amazed at the similarities.
I mean, that's the thing, right, is that, like, completely different vocation. For a long time, I was a vet nurse. I was nursing for 8 years. And I always said to myself that, look, there will be a time where this isn't what I can or want to or need to be able to do anymore. And for some people, it's losing a passion. For some people, it's losing interest. Or for some people, the toll if it becomes too much. And you need to know that transition point and be in tune with yourself to be able to go, I need to step aside from this now. And I know being an athlete, like you need to be in tune with your body and your mind as well, and having that centrality of self and understanding, this is who I am right now and this is what I'm able to do. What was the kind of the teaching point for you to understand what that centrality meant and to know when the right time was to step away from being an athlete?
It's a very good question. I think there's lots of bumps in the road. Nobody really ever has even a season that's quite smooth. But I as I said, I always thought to myself, I knew I would know when I should step away. And it was really interesting because no matter how many times I I say lost a race, but we say second is the fastest loser. So, when you don't win, like there would still be like, no, I can improve though, and I know what I should do, and I should just train harder and work harder and understand better. But there is a fatigue that comes after seasons and pushing your body and pushing your mind, because you're right, it's very much just as much a mental game as a physical one. And I think there were a couple of Olympics in my 20s that I thought I could have made, and I didn't. And you kind of have to have everything go right, and not everything went right. And I remember saying to myself, I didn't know if I could make a team, an Olympic team, but I also didn't like I didn't want to quit before I had, but I was running out of opportunity. And I really always loved the Pierre de Coubertin quote about how it's actually he founded the modern Olympics on the idea that it's not about the triumph, it's about the struggle. And I think my mum asked me a question after the Rio Olympics, when I didn't get selected and didn't have the performance that I really wanted. And she was like, well, you know this now, like, would you change the journey just because you know the outcome? And I realized that I didn't think I would. I'd learned so much from the sport about myself, about the world, about the people around me. I'd traveled kind of as a profession. Like, I mean, athletics is interesting because it doesn't pay very well, but that it was just so amazing to be a part of. And I was like, no, look, I've made some Australian teams. Is it what I wanted to do with the sport? No. But then I also had some friends kind of confide in me and say, like, nothing's ever enough. Like, I said to one friend who was an Olympian, yeah, but you made the Olympics. Like, I wish that was me. And she's like, yeah, but I didn't get an Olympic medal. And then I spoke to her from, other friends who have had Olympic medals, and they go, but it's not gold. And then those people who win the Olympic gold say, but it's not a world record. And I realized that the nature of who we are as elite athletes is that we're always chasing perfection, and perfection's out of reach. So with that in mind, I was like, well, there are also people I know in my life who are jealous of the Australian teams that I've made. And I have to realize that that is an achievement. And, I don't have the hunger anymore to fight for it, because I kind of think I've got what I can out of the sport. And that's the point where now I need to direct like my passion and my hunger and my ability, I think, to be very very task orientated into something else. And so that's what I did.
Well, it's a great way of segueing into talking about the edge, which is utilizing your experiences, your lived experience, your knowledge and understanding of the sport, of the industry of sport as well. And additionally, what it means to also be a woman in sport and a woman in cinema. Like it's matching up quite comfortably. And I know that you've talked about like reflecting on the amount of sports films that have been made and how few have been made about women's sports. And when I read that, and I did some reflecting on it too, in the sense that I know that there is a bunch of documentaries. There's a documentary which is a perfect companion piece to this called Queens of Concrete, which came out last year. I think it's just dropped on Netflix, but that's a documentary. So I've got lots of documentaries about women's sports, but not very many scripted films. And then I think The one film that came to mind was Queen of Katwe, which is back from 2015. But that's about chess, right? And I know people are like, is chess even a sport? And it's like, well, depends on who you talk to. But that's like the most recent one that I can really think of that comes to mind. So I'd love to hear from you about the perspective of bringing women's stories to scripted narrative films about sport, because it's such a rarity that we get to see, especially in Australian context. So what does that mean to you?
Look, you're absolutely right. I grew up with films like Remember the Titans, which is one of my all-time favorite films. I mean, athletes are obsessive, but I reckon I watch that film every couple of months. Like, I cry every time. I just love it so much. But yes, I did love sports films growing up. Like, and there was a pattern to me, and I think we see this across a lot of people who feel like they represent minorities, but I never saw myself represented. A lot of it was American, you're right, and a lot of it was male athletes. And a lot of, like, I didn't really ever see too much track and field. Chariots of Fire was the movie my parents and I used to shove on the night before a big race. Absolutely loved it. Just the pinnacle, I think, of the human spirit is, that combination of pushing the mind and the body. But yeah, and I guess they always say, write what you know and write what you want to see. And that was what I knew, and it was definitely what I wanted to see. So when I made my first team, I think it was the World School Games, and we went to Greece, which was phenomenal because, of course, that's the birthplace of the modern Olympics. I was 15 or 16 at the time, and we traveled with the para athletes, and there were also obviously First Nations athletes on that team. And something that really stood out to me was that I'd always said to people, "Oh, where are the female, athlete stories at?" But I hadn't really realized that, obviously, you look through your own lens. I wasn't a para athlete. I have a Maori background, but I'm not First Nation Australian. And I realized that actually there were overlapping fields here about minorities that weren't represented, and we've seen that as a common theme across cinema. And I actually think the trend is a really positive one. We're starting to see a lot of representation and a lot of, like, we only really learn about different stories and perspectives through the medium of storytelling. And I just think it's a beautiful way to show someone, your experience and your journey. So I started writing The Edge as a script, and it just developed and developed. And eventually I met Mei Ichinose, who plays Yui Takahashi in The Edge, and she became the inspiration for that character. And I got permission to use quite a lot of basis of her life. And then I wrote Sylvia kind of in reverse. Like, I imagined this character based off a multitude of characters that I'd known, and just my own imagination. And then it's like she came to life. But yeah, I remember thinking, like, I want to see this, and I knew I wasn't alone. And something that's been really, really inspiring and positive to me over the years is that when I speak to people, in the beginning, when I was like, don't you want to see, like, women on screen? In the beginning, it was actually like, nah. Like, I was really shocked that some people just would straight out tell me. And then I think as time went on, that changed. And it changed because more stories are getting out there, and I wanted to be a part of that change.
Was there something cathartic as well about writing the script?
Yes, of course. Yeah, very much so. It's I'm not like the character I wrote that I played. Like, there are bits of me that are. I think her steadfastness and her competitiveness are the same, but I'm a little bit ridiculous. Like, I don't know. I think outside of sport, like, I'm not that serious a person. But, like, I think she was just definitely a facet or an aspect of me. But it was really cathartic to have certain lines, and all three of the girls, there are things that had happened to all of us, and that was kind of a shared experience. I remember, and this has changed too, like, body types. Like, in the gym, people used to come up to me, especially girls, and they'd say, "I really love your figure." And I'd go to say thanks, and they'd be like, "But not your shoulders." And I'd be like, "Oh, okay." Well, I sprint, so, like, this is kind of the full package. But now you're seeing a real push towards gym culture and stuff, and cultural opinion can be really fluid. But I mean, again, we get to decide the direction it goes a lot of the time, and isn't that great that we can push it in a way that, like, let's open our experiences, and that's cool.
Yeah. I mean, you talk about the inclusivity of the script and the performers too, and none of it feels forced or like jammed in. It feels lived in and organic. And I'm curious if you can talk about the importance of it being lived in and organic as well, rather than tokenistic, because so often, especially male-written or male-directed films about women's stories feel tokenistic. Not all of them, of course, but a fair few of them do. So having it come from, a lived perspective, that is equally important. But yeah, can you talk about the importance of that organic feeling?
Absolutely. I think authenticity is very important. I think we see when people tell stories, they don't always know what it is they're connecting to, but people are actually pretty good at sensing what's truth and what's not. And that's why I think with actors, ever since, method actors and Stanislavski and everything that's been going forth, we want to feel and we want to see reality, or we want to be shown a version of it. And I think it always really angered me growing up when I think, like, nothing against Blake Lively and the Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants, but in the Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants, she's meant to be a star soccer player. And she starts running, and that's my bread and butter. And I look at her and I go, well, she can't run.
Yeah.
She just can't. And, like, I mean, maybe, like, not fast. I know what fast looks like, and that's not that. And my mum was sort of always laughing at me every time I'd pull up female athletes, and she'd be like, well, Jen, what do you expect? They're just actors. And I'd be like, well, no, I'm sensing that there's actually there's a real separation here, because when Chris Hemsworth needs to look like Thor, or Hugh Jackman needs to look like Wolverine, they put him through pretty intensive training. And yet for women, they kind of were just like, if she's skinny enough, if she's kind of hot enough, everything else can fall by the wayside. And I didn't like that. Because the number of times I'd be like, she cannot run, no, she could not lift that. Like, there are women out there who look like warriors, but why aren't they on screen? And people would be like, maybe they're not marketable. And I said, I think that's where you're wrong. And I think that's why it was really important too, why I wrote a power lifter, because a power lifter does not look like another athlete. And I was like, we are going to find a power lifter. Like, we're going to find a woman who looks like she can, squat a few hundred kilos. And we did, and she looks like that. And that's really special. And I think when people see that on screen, they're going to recognize that authenticity. They're going to recognize that the whole way she carries herself is with strength. The whole way that she operates, like, her personality is, as it often is with all of us, sewn into, like, our embodiment of what we do. We carry ourselves like that. And I'm hoping that people will look at those starting lines and, girls in the set position, and they will look at, Lily playing Sylvia lifting those weights, and Yui streamlining the water, and see the truth in that. And that again makes it something that people can resonate with. They identify truth, they recognize it, and they empathize with it more, I hope. I hope.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I mean, it's interesting. I was listening to an interview. Viola Davis was reflecting on The Woman King recently, and the physicality that she had in that film. She's like, I've not seen women presented on screen this way. Her character in that film is 57 years old, and she's, muscly, she's ripped, basically.
I love
She's,
her. I yep.
yeah,
Yeah.
phenomenal, right? And then that physicality leans into that character's perspective and worldview as well. And what I'm trying to get at is that, Lily, phenomenal on screen, just demand like draws your attention so like really, really strong. But part of the reason for that is that it's a style of personality that we rarely get to see from a woman on screen, right?
Yeah.
Weightlifting, we don't get to see women weightlifters on screen at all. And we certainly don't get to see bi women on screen very often. And then we also don't get to see women advocating for themselves in the way that she does. So the whole perspective and the whole character there is such a powerful representation of different aspects. And she's not just one thing, she is a complex human being. Can you talk about the importance of being able to present this different kind of femininity or womanhood on screen in this way?
I think you touched on something really important earlier when you said that sometimes when women are written, they're oversimplified, or there's a trope, or there's a stereotype. And I completely agree with that. But people, and that's, you know, men, women, old, young, gay, straight, everything in between. It's we are complex. And I wrote characters based on things that I knew, people I knew, you know, events that I knew, imagination based on fact, et cetera. But a comment that we got all throughout the film was, wow, but the three girls are so different. And I said, of course they're different. Why wouldn't they be different? They come from different cultures. They have different sports. The only thing that they really have in common is that they're women and that they're athletes and that they're now living together. But of course they're incredibly different, complex characters. And people were like, oh, I just don't think I was expecting that because I just thought it would be like, you know, cookie cutters. Like this is a female athlete. And it made me really, I was really happy that people saw how different the characters were. And you're absolutely right in the sense that when people think feminine, I think people are drawn to a very certain trope, and it might not be a female athlete, and it might not be someone like Lily or myself, May, who springs to mind. But why not? I definitely feel like we are all very feminine in our own way, you know. But then it's fine to lean into masculine traits too, and vice versa. And I really wanted it to be, and Lily was on board with this from the get-go. I didn't want it to be trite, you know, like just things about, oh my God, I'm out here and I'm bisexual. I just wanted it, like every time anyone actually asked her, she shrugs it off. She's like, what I like, who I like, just like, you know, whatever. Because the women that I knew and the men that I knew, like there were so many people who felt like maybe they were representing a demographic, and there were other people who were like, I don't know, man, I'm just me. Like, you know, do I really have to be in a box that you want to put me in just so that you can understand me better? And yeah, she was really on board with that. She's like, oh yeah, cool. So she's just not gonna over-explain herself to anyone because why should she? And Lily very much is like that in real life, which is amazing. Being around her is to be around strength. You find yourself sort of standing taller. And I once jokingly said to her, she was all dressed up, and I think we were going to maybe dinner, just the three of us, because we spent a lot of time together. And I said to her, look at you pretty little thing. And she clobbered me. She full blown whacked me, and I would have got a bruise. And I said, oh my God, oh. And she goes, I'm not little. And I said, no, you're not. Sorry. And she said, don't call me a pretty little thing. She goes, I work hard. And I said, I will never do it again. It slipped out. And we laughed about it for about a minute. And it was so refreshing to see someone. I mean, instead of the 90s heroin chic, they were like, no, I'm not small. And that's on purpose. And I'm really proud of like what I've done with my body.
Well, I mean, that's the thing, like, and so refreshing to see it in the film too, is the redefining of roles that society has often said we need to see more of, not just on screen, but in society, and giving space to talking about queer stories, disabled stories, First Nation stories, all of these kinds of things. And, you know, I know that we won't skew into politics, but like, that is vilified in some way across the world, in a way that's like, oh, we shouldn't kind of pander to this. But what I love about this film is it gives space to all of that and says, no, regardless of whether you think that it should exist or not, it's going to be here regardless, because we're people, we're humans, and it's what makes us who we are. No matter what you say, it's not going to change who we are as people. And you've given space to that in a way that feels organic, again, that word. But coming back to something we were talking before we started recording was about the relationship of reality and fiction. And at the times, this film feels like almost skewing into documentary territory. And I know it's scripted, but it feels so organic that it feels real and it feels lived in because it is lived in. And that blurring of the lines between documentary and fiction feels real here. Was that kind of the feeling for you on set, shooting it, being involved in that way?
Yes, very much so. I spoke a lot to every department about let's make sure it feels like they're here, like they're in the action. And you know, this was my first ever show run film, and credit I baptism by fire. I learned a lot. But the departments were also very patient with me. I think understanding what it feels like a lot of people understand, like, if a camera's up close, that's going to feel a certain way. But there's so much more to it than that. Like, for instance, the authenticity extended into costume design. Like, we had Puma and LSKD authentically come on board to donate clothes and sponsor us in that way. And Puma is the current sponsor of Australian athletics, so that's authentic. You know, Speedo for swimming, SBD for powerlifting. There are things that make people feel like they're at an actual competition beyond just performances or camera angles. And I was really fortunate enough to learn about a lot of those things. Something else that I, like you were saying, not want, like wanting it to be organic. And speaking about like our disability, May is such an inspiring figure, and she's always really talked about like ability, not disability. And I was fortunate enough to be friends with her before we started filming, which is why she became the basis for the character. But it was incredible because, like, when you're with her, obviously we're not talking all the time about poor you, you know, you have a disability. Like, that's not her. Who she is she's funny. She's feisty. You know, she represents a culture. She's traveled, she's intelligent, and everything becomes about that. Like, and that's why it was really important to me that in the film, the girls don't spend all the time being like, no, I'll open that jar. No, you're disabled. Like, it's part of the furniture, because anybody who knows anybody in that space will know that that's exactly what it is. It just becomes, you know, it just becomes part of the setting, just like we all do. Like, sometimes we have conversations, and it was actually really funny to me that I'd been friends with her for a long time. And when I sat down and said, you know, I wrote the script, I'd love you to play this character. And I said, and I think maybe we should actually talk about some of the stuff that's been really hard for you. And it was funny to me that I'd been friends with her and yet still had to ask that question, because it wasn't obvious. She hadn't made it obvious in her lived experience. She's tough. And that's why the childhood flashback scene, for young Yui, which you'll see if you see the film in the future, see the film. like, that's actually lived experience. And that's why she gave permission for that, and she directed that. I mean, it's in Japanese, so I wouldn't have been much good at it anyway. But I think stuff like that, like you were saying, lends back to that authenticity.
She's wonderful in the film too. Had she done acting before?
No, neither of them had. May's a very confident public speaker, and I think Lily's just a very confident person. I put them through, I wanted to find an athletes first and kind of train them up to be actors, especially seeing as though I felt like the characters, well, for May, Yui's based on May, and for Sylvia, it was like somehow I wrote a person into being. We've laughed about it so much. Lily and I've laughed about it. But no, I asked them if they could treat the film like training, like a sport. And in credit to them, they both worked their bums off. They were incredible. And we did a lot of acting classes. We had an on-set acting coach. They trained for about in the year we spent in pre-production beforehand. But no, it's both their acting debuts, which is amazing.
Oh, they're wonderful. Well, hopefully you get to see more of them if that's what they choose to do, acting wise. And if not, then we've got two great performances for them. I'd love to talk as well because it's screening at Gold Coast Film Festival coming up. And I know that
It
you live in Queensland and you've worked a bunch in Queensland. And I'm curious if you can talk about your perspective of the film industry in Queensland as well and what it's like being part of that.
Yeah, it premieres at the Gold Coast Film Festival on the 2nd of May. And then there's an additional screening on the 6th of May. I remember growing up and going to Movie World, and it always said like
Oh,
Hollywood on
yeah.
Gold Coast. And I always thought that was the coolest thing in the world. Yeah, so Hollywood on the Gold Coast, Movie World. I mean, I grew up loving that. I was actually born in WA though, which is quite
Oh,
funny.
nice.
But yeah, I think for a long time people always said, you know, Australia's too far out of the way. I think we probably owe a lot to Chris Hemsworth, who during the COVID era brought a whole bunch of films to Australia. But Australia's very diverse. I mean, Queensland more than other states, particularly, I think, with the beaches and the hinterland, it can be whatever you kind of want it to be. But in saying that, I do think we've got a long way to go. I think Australia can sometimes be a little bit behind. Like the US, you know, we kind of see trends with the US and the UK, and sometimes it'll hit us 5 years later. And I do think that there are some really great initiatives that, like, the governing bodies and stuff have started to get the big international films here, and that is incredible. But I also think we need to push for domestic content. And all the countries in the world who have done a really good job of that, like South Korea, their industry's boomed, Ireland, and their industry's boomed. And so I think if we focus on that, we can, the sky's the limit. We've got amazing creatives here. And I love Queensland. I was really proud that I got to shoot The Edge on the Sunshine Coast. We had local council support. Wish we could have got governing body support, says every indie filmmaker ever, right? But it's a beautiful location. And I've lived overseas quite a lot with my sport and everything. And I don't think I'm biased in saying that Australia is just one of the most beautiful places in the world.
Oh, it really is. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's the thing is like you capture it wonderfully too. And I think leading into obviously Queensland is very fortunate to have a future Olympics. So it's kind of like setting the groundwork of being like, see, this is what's possible here. You know, this is what we can do. This is what's coming as well from an Australian perspective too, which is huge. For your future as a filmmaker, not trying to push you into thinking about your next project so soon, but I'm curious if, like, what kind of stories you want to tell? What avenue of storytelling do you want to bring to life on screen?
It's a very good question. I've thought about it and I don't have a good answer. I think as well, like I was saying earlier, I don't really want to be boxed in. I love representing minority voices, so definitely strong female characters, diverse characters. But I love comedy, I love drama, I love science fiction. I would be open to a range of genres and characters. I think I just also really love the idea of truth and authenticity, and also considering different perspectives. So yeah, I'm not sure. I've always written scripts. I've got a few scripts that, I've thought I'll push maybe in the future, but I really wanted to get this one over the line first. And it's been a much bigger journey than I would have thought. I always joked that I started this game as a sprinter and I've ended as a marathon runner, because to be an indie filmmaker, you kind of have to, you just have to keep slogging. And I don't think people really understand what's involved until they get here. And that included myself, and I was in the industry. And I'm really happy that we've been able to get this over the line, that we've been able to, give it an Aussie premiere at the Gold Coast Film Festival, that people will come and see it. I'm hoping that
Yeah.
people will relate to it and relate to the characters. And yeah, I'm just excited for that.
Yeah. I mean, so much to be proud of. Like, I'm excited to see where you go as a filmmaker and as a storyteller, but I'm also excited to see what the impact might be as well. And hopefully, again, coming back to what you were saying before, the lack of women's stories about women athletics and sports and all this kind of stuff on screen is just certainly, we need more of it. So you're introducing a change and a shift, which is really, really it's exciting to see. So I know that people are going to resonate with it. So congratulations. Yeah.
Oh, thank you very much. Yeah, I mean, keep doing what you're doing, very much the same. It's amazing to hear stories from, people in the creative spaces. It's such a weird old space to be in, this creative space. We're always full of self-doubt and imagine
Yeah,
that.
look, it is, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, like you certainly go, am I doing, is anybody paying attention? Am I doing this like
But
right?
does it
Is it
mean
going well?
something?
Yeah, does it have an impact? And it's like, yes, it actually does. And I know it does because I've heard from people who I've either interviewed or I've heard from people who have read or listened to interviews that I've done or pieces I've read, and it's it this is opened up a whole new avenue for things. So it means a lot for me to be able to spotlight work like yourself and to spotlight Australian voices. Like it's a privilege. I don't take this for granted. I'm very grateful that I get to be able to spend time talking about your work and elevating films and things like that. So thank you for your time. It means a lot. And I know that the premiere is going to do great. Yeah.
Oh, thank you so much. I've really enjoyed our chat.
Hey, thanks again for listening to this chat with Jane Larkin. The Edge makes its world premiere at the Gold Coast Film Festival on 2nd of May 2025. For other interviews and reviews, visit thecurb.com.au. Please rate, review, and share this interview with your film-loving friends. We hope they like it as much as you have. I'll see you on the next one.